Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Natural Womanhood Podcast. It's been a minute since our last season, so we're so grateful to be back. For our opening episode, Grace and I reflect on what postpartum really looks like, having both just been through our third and second respectively births. We hope you enjoy.
Yeah, welcome back to the second season of the Natural Womanhood Podcast.
There's been a few changes, right? So Grace has had a baby.
Yes.
I had a baby at the beginning of last year, or when we first started recording.
Yeah. We launched a podcast while you had a newborn.
And I think it's also probably why the topic for our first episode back is postpartum.
Yeah. It's a natural one.
It's been on all of our brains. And it's something that, I mean, virtually every mom goes through this like intense transitional period. And I think for me, working in the postpartum, I'm working with postpartum moms all the time, I keep thinking about how this area is just so like shockingly, woefully, completely undercared for. What were your experiences this time around? Because it's your third baby, so it's not like your first time around the block.
No, yeah. And I think that that has been kind of the single biggest difference this time around. Was this is where I felt like the perspective really kind of set in finally. It's like, oh, this would have been nice to have a while ago. But definitely the third time around, you know, still having like the same sleepless nights, the same physical tiredness and transitions from going from being pregnant to delivering and now no longer being pregnant, but still, you know, your body just still not feeling how it normally feels. All of that was the same, but I felt like this time around, I was able to handle it a lot better because I just knew this is a season. Postpartum is a season. It's not going to feel like this forever. My body will start to feel slightly more normal. I have been able to give myself a lot more grace this time around, just with the healing and not feeling like I need to fit back into my clothes right away, or having that kind of almost despair, not to be over dramatic, but with your first baby, right, everything changes, just everything. And you have those moments where you're like, oh my gosh, like you love your baby, you love your children, but you're like, a little part of you is like, why did we do this? We can never go back. It's going to feel like this forever, right? You know what I'm talking about.
I remember like genuinely wondering if I would ever eat at a table again.
Yeah.
Like, parents eat at tables. I don't remember, like, I don't, cause I was just so like, you know, wide eyed, completely deer in headlights.
Yeah. And we all are that first time around, and there's just no way to prepare someone for that. It's such a trial by fire, and it is really easy, especially if you don't have, you know, other mom friends your age who have been through it recently, to just feel very isolated, to feel very kind of mired in the muck of sleepless nights and poopy diapers and, you know, achy, leaking breasts and all of that. And so this time around, just knowing like, you know what, this is going to pass, and it's actually going to pass by really quickly, was hugely, hugely helpful to just my like kind of mental, emotional reckoning this time around. And I almost wished I could like bottle that up and give it to first time moms. But again, it's like just kind of something you have to achieve through the passage of time. And I will say too, that obviously your birth experience, I think, can have a pretty big impact on how you handle your postpartum time. I have been super fortunate where I have not had any major injuries or anything like that. with any of my births and have had like pretty normal, I haven't had C-sections. And so I've not had, I can't speak to the experience of someone who has like a lot of physical healing to go through. And just imagining, if you're a new mom listening to this, who has all of the really intense emotional and mental stuff going on top of like healing from severe tears or healing from a C-section or just anything that, you know, didn't necessarily go the way you wanted it to, having the physical stuff on top of it would be like definitely give yourself some serious grace to rest and to just appreciate the work that your body did and to give it the time that it needs to heal. And I think that in our culture is, I think that it's getting better, but just the expectation of needing to bounce back, or that this isn't, you know, you've done the hard work already, so, you know, get back to it. A lot of the hard work comes in the postpartum time period. That's when, like, you know, you become a mom when you conceive your baby, but that's when you like really like grow into your motherhood. And you think like, wow, all the growing I did before physically, now this is where the mental, the emotional growing has to happen. And taking that time to physically heal and rest is part and parcel of that. And especially when you can't rely on, you know, getting sleep at night. Right. Yeah.
I was with a mom just the other day who had a 5-day-old, and she looked me in the eyes and she goes, "This is the hardest thing of all of it. She goes, "The pregnancy, the birth, this is the hardest."
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's the case necessarily for everyone, but I agree with that sort of idea of, and I tell people all the time, you know, even in a perfectly healthy, complication-free birth,
mm-hmm.
there's still a massive amount of healing that needs mm-hmm. to be done physically and emotionally. So if there's any type of complication, it just adds to the sort of necessary healing time.
Right.
With my first, I definitely had like that kind of deer in headlights. I was totally unprepared. I mean, I think everyone's unprepared, but I was like super unprepared to become a mom. I just had no concept of like what was normal newborn behavior. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people don't have
an
understanding. And you mentioned like it's something you just have to get by trial by fire. And it's like this great mathematical question that I have. I'm like, why? Like all you ever hear anyone talk about when they talk about having a baby is how you'll never sleep. And yet when moms find themselves with a baby who won't sleep, they're like, I'm not getting any sleep.
Yeah.
Like everyone is like surprised by it or shocked by it or confused by it. And I wonder if it's something that you just like your pregnant brain, like literally can't like, understand or something. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
The thing that my mom has really helpfully reminded me of each time, because inevitably, you know, you have, even though I said I had a lot more perspective this time around and I felt like it was easier, there's still for like that first month, your emotions are haywire because your hormones are going crazy still. They're in that free fall, that postpartum free fall. And inevitably you're going to have some kind of breakdown at some point. It just happens. And it often will catch you off guard. And what my mom has reminded me every single time that's been immensely helpful is the fact of just how extreme lack of sleep is on everything, on your mental, emotional, physical state, your outlook. It's so hard to see through the tunnel when you have so little sleep. And my mom has always said, "Grace, this is why keeping people awake is a form of torture. Like, this is why armies have used it, because you become desperate. You have this desperation. You have this sense of like, nothing will get better. it's going to be like this forever. I'm always going to feel like it just colors everything. And my mom reminding me that like literally like sleep deprivation has been used as a form of torture. Like gave me the validation that I've needed every time I've come to her with my inevitable like postpartum breakdown, like, oh, everything is just terrible. I'm so, you know, she's like, that's because you're essentially being tortured. Right.
But I do like to remind people this, that there is some form of a design here, because if you were to go through the sleep deprivation that you're going through, excuse me. So if you were to go through the amount of sleep deprivation outside of postpartum, there's no way you'd be able to handle it even half as well as a postpartum mom can. A mom
explain that.
That intense oxytocin and prolactin, those two, that's an incredible pair. And that's one of the reasons why breastfeeding can, sometimes it can cause the opposite effect. It depends on a few things, but, people, I always say, lean into your hormones, that oxytocin, that adrenaline, that prolactin is rooting for you. It's helping you get through this sleep deprivation. So even though you feel like you're completely falling apart, without those hormones, you'd be really falling apart.
You actually would be falling apart, and, not just feeling like you are,
right,
is what you're saying.
And it's also one of the reasons why sometimes the male partners have a harder time with it, because they don't have the same amount of prolactin and adrenaline. They do have some oxytocin, but not in the same amount. So I always like to say we're designed for this the same way we're designed for birth, even though birth sometimes goes awry. It's still like is the leading like purpose. And I think expectations is a huge piece of it. Like I know with my first, I just like was not prepared. I just had no idea how all consuming, how my life was going to change. I was also living in New York City, in like a tiny, tiny one bedroom apartment, that was very dark and didn't get any sunlight. I look back on that and I'm like, no wonder I was depressed. Like I had no sunlight in that apartment. And I just think this second time around for me, expectations were shifted. And it was like, again, like you've said, you know, it's like, it's not going to always be like this.
Yeah.
And one of the things I've been reflecting on a lot is just how parenting in general is so, it's like crazy to me that the moment can feel so intense, but then once it's gone, it's just like gone. I was looking at these videos of my daughter, you know, when she was a baby, and I was like, it's crazy that like now she's like a fully formed human who's like writing and reading and going to school, and my son will be that. But today, I don't know what that will like today. All I have today is today.
Yes. Yes.
And I joke that my agenda as a lactation consultant, like I have one agenda, and it's not to get everyone to breastfeed like people think. My agenda is to get people to enjoy their babies, because everyone, it's a birthright to enjoy your baby. And I think a lot of our culture around babies is fear-based, it's consumer-based, it's materialistic-based. And so it's like, if you don't have this item, you're going to have a terrible postpartum. And if you don't buy this thing and this class and this like, you know, thing, you know, and babies need so little, moms need so little. I mean, moms need more than the babies, to be honest.
You mean like materially we need so like, little. Yeah.
Like all a baby needs is their mom. That's really all a baby needs.
Yeah.
Now the mom needs support, food, hydration, mental like rest, healing, you know, all these things. And that's why I always focus on like the mom, because I say baby's needs will be met. Moms will make sure of that.
Yeah.
But is the mom's needs, like, are their needs being met? You know, are they getting rest? Are they getting, are they having adequate expectations? Are they able to put their feet up? Are they, you know, and the answer is no.
Right. Well, and that goes back to what you said that was just really profound just a few minutes ago, was getting women to enjoy their babies. And if they have all of these roadblocks, you know, the exhaustion, the inability to put up their feet, like you said, or like feeling like they're not, you know, taking care of their baby when somebody like you can point out, no, you're meeting your baby's needs. You're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. Those kinds of roadblocks are the things that keep women from enjoying their babies, from enjoying this transition into motherhood. I think that's such a, just like, you just really stood things on their head.
And I think too, there's a lot of fear in postpartum because moms have to go back to work so early.
Yeah,
there's a fear about getting the baby on a schedule, getting the baby on, you know, how are they going to do it, daycare or with a nanny? Like so much of early postpartum is geared towards prepping the baby for that.
Yeah.
And the moms like almost don't even get to enjoy their maternity leave because they're so worried about building a freezer stash or like getting the baby on the schedule so that when they go to daycare, they'll fit into whatever the daycare, like, you know, so
yes.
I feel like that's my agenda, is I want you to enjoy this time. And it's hard to enjoy because you're so sleep deprived. And I think, like I said, there's a lot of fear around sleep and scheduling and feeding. Feeding can be really stressful for a lot of people. There was something else I was going to bring up. Everyone has like a little bit of a different culture around this, but for me, I'm like, take your baby out. I mean, obviously it's been a pandemic and been a little, you know, but I think moms spend this time like hold up at home with no support and no community. And I always say babies, we're carrying mammals, one. So babies want to be toted around. That's what they want to do. And they oftentimes, babies are happier when they're out and about. Have you ever noticed like your baby does really well when you go to the mall?
Yes.
Like, or when you go when you go anywhere, you know, it's, they only like lose their mind when they're at home.
Just like moms, right? Like, no, so Cassie, that's such a good point.
I'm always encouraging people. I'm like, get out. Like, babies aren't precious little. I mean, they are precious. They're extremely precious, but they're not precious to the point that they can't like be outside,
right?
And be around people. There's nothing more comforting to a baby than being out in a village, so to speak, where there's movement, because that means if people are moving, if there's other people, then that means safety. What's terrifying to a baby is being put in a dark room by themselves on a, like, I'm talking about like a really, really young baby, you know, like they're like, what is this? This is not like, they're like, I was inside this. I was in my mom for 9 months and now I'm like just being left, you know, like,
I know they go from being constantly held, right? Essentially, and constantly in movement because you're always in movement. Yeah. To the immobile freeness of like, you know, a crib or something. And of course, yeah, I see totally what you mean about, the need to be held, the need for movement. And it's, you can see that very clearly in the baby who, will not accept, like my husband will want to hold our baby at night, my four-month-old, and sit. And she's not okay with that.
Right.
Like, she wants to be in dad's arms, but dad's not allowed to sit. Dad needs to be standing, bouncing, walking around. And yeah, you have such a good point there that babies do well, especially like pretty early on, wanting to be up and about and out and about. And I see now too, in you saying that, you're putting pieces together for me that I never even really realized. Like when my son, our oldest, was born 5 years ago now, the only way to get him to fall asleep was in the ergo while I was up and walking around. And one of the things I did, was we lived on the 9th floor of a condo building on Guam. I'd put him in the ergo and I'd go up and down the 9 flights. It was an outside stairway. Yeah. And I mean, beautiful view. I could see the ocean, and because Guam is a tropical little island. And that was how I got exercise, how I got myself out of the little condo by myself all day long while my husband was working. And that was often how I got our son to sleep. And it was good for me too. I got the benefit of being,
you get the benefit of movement. Mm-hmm. Movement is good for moms and babies.
Yeah.
There's like these kits you can buy or these ideas on Pinterest of like how to have sensory stimulate your baby. And I'm like, the best way to sensory stimulate your baby is to go somewhere.
Yeah.
Go anywhere. It doesn't even have to be somewhere fancy. It doesn't have to be like,
no,
you know, I come from this sort of New York background where everything is like, I don't know, trendy and commodified and whatever. And I'm like, you don't have to just go to the bodega. Like,
right.
It doesn't have
there's
to
enough
be.
Sensory stuff going on at the bodega for sure.
I mean, I might argue there's a little too much sensory stuff going on
yeah.
in New York City, but I just see that a lot with the moms that I work with. I see there's this, and particularly with the pandemic, we see these moms and babies that are just not going places. And again, I'm not talking about being in crowded areas, but just getting out, going, you know, go on a hike, go around the neighborhood.
Every mom friend that I have met in the last couple of years, I've met them on a walk in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, like, just throwing the baby in the stroller, putting the baby in the ergo and just walking through the neighborhood. I'm serious. Every mom friend I've met, at least until my son started preschool. And that's when, you know, new moms, if you're listening and you're wondering, will I ever have friends again? Will I ever speak to an adult again? When your kids go to school, it becomes a lot easier.
Yeah.
Once they're like in preschool, kindergarten, there's kind of a natural venue for making friends, but it is hard early on before school starts. And you do have to, as hard as it is, try to make the effort. But the good news is it doesn't have to be like finding a group that you go meet up with. Like, you, if you get out in a neighborhood, if you're blessed enough to live in a neighborhood that's walkable, you will find other moms like you doing the same thing, because we're all just pushing our babies around like zombies, praying that we bump into one another. And I have found, and I've lived in two different areas now since having kids, three different areas now since having kids. And yeah, just getting out and walking around, other moms will find you. You will find each other. And some of those friends will end up being like your best friends because they are in the trenches with you. So to Cassie's point, getting out, getting about, it's not just good for you. It's not just good for your baby. It's like, it's really good from a community building standpoint, which is where postpartum is the toughest, is if you don't feel like you have a community, if you don't feel like you have that village, as so many of us don't, that's where the difficulty really lies, is feeling unsupported, feeling isolated, especially while you're dealing with the other physical stuff too. That's a lot of heavy, heavy stuff to be dealing with.
I was going to say too, I think there's a divisive, particularly with babies in our culture, there's a really divisive mentality around parent. I feel like parenthood like kind of mellows out, or at least in my experience, it mellows out like as a kid gets older. But I feel like in early parenting or like babyhood, it's like pretty much like breastfeeding, formula feeding, sleep training. Like there's these really like divisive topics that people get very passionate about.
Yeah.
And what I've learned for myself is that we all love our kids, right?
Like, right.
We all love our kids and think that they're just the greatest thing on the planet. And we do all have something in common with, like, I have something in common with every single mother, every other mom out there. I think part of this, I can't remember, there was like a commercial I'm trying to remember it. I can't remember what it was a commercial for, but it was like these moms in a park and they were pushing strollers and they were like feeding bottles and the other moms were breastfeeding. And it was like, I forget what it was even an ad for, but the whole point was like
the mommy wars.
And it's like this idea that I personally think that like fuels sort of,
the isolation.
Yeah, like it furthers the isolation and makes people feel like, you know, and I do think there's other moms that you might connect more with, but it doesn't mm-hmm. mean that like there's a certain type of mom that like you are. I remember when I had my daughter, my first, I was like trying to figure out like what type of parent am I? Mm-hmm. And the answer is like, it depends on the day. It depends on the kid. It depends on, yes. you know, like we all have like things yeah. that we do, but we don't fit into these like nice, neat little square boxes.
Yeah.
And as I've gotten older, it's been really freeing for people to ask me something about parenting. And I'll say, well, you know, like this is what I did, or this is what I'm doing, but I don't know if it's like the right thing. It's just like what we're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's what we're doing while it works. And when it stops to work, we'll do something else.
Yeah. Like
not and- being ideologically dug in to certain things. I think, yeah, becomes super important right away. Because you need that freedom to assess your current personal situation, your current child, because like you said, things change even from kid to kid. That can be super freeing and takes a lot of the pressure off of you as a new mom that you're probably, you know, putting on yourself, frankly.
Yeah. And I promise you, if you are a new mom, like some of these decisions that feel like so big in the moment, like they, a lot of them, I'm not gonna say they're not important, but like they do tend to
mm-hmm.
get a little bit more in the rear view.
But yes.
I think in the early months of parenting, that's your only experience with parenting.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's all you know, like, okay, yes. should I do baby led weaning or should I do like purees? Like, it's like, that feels like such a big decision. And I'm not saying that that's not like an important decision, but
yeah,
it just isn't like, it doesn't decide what type of parent you are.
No, you know? Or what like... type of child your right. kid is going to grow into. Yeah, definitely.
And so for me, having an older child, it's helpful to be like, you know what? Like they really do all go to kindergarten. Like,
yep. They all really turn out do. Okay.
they really do all sleep eventually. I don't know when, but they do.
Yeah. Yep. yeah. The perspective, it's huge. And again, like I wish it could be bottled. I wish it could be given away to new moms, but that is where the more you can seek out the counsel of other moms. I mean, that's huge because yeah. you've even texted me before, like with your little boy about his sleep and stuff. And I know like, I am constantly, there's one mom, anytime I have a question about like my, you know, I see her as like my mom authority kind of thing. And, I will reach out to her about anything with my kids, and cause she's got five of them and has been at the game longer than I have. And, just having those like go-to moms who, you know, aren't going to judge whatever you end up deciding, who you can just kind of like springboard experiences mm-hmm. with is huge, especially for women. I think men need to be able to commiserate with other men too, but I think there's something really special about moms needing to be able, women needing to be able to share our experiences with one another, to feel free to do that and to get advice from each other.
Yeah.
Without feeling like there's a judgment there if you don't take it, or that there is one way of doing things that's better than another. And if a mom ever does make you feel that way, they should not be your go-to mom.
I have some friends with teenagers, and it is a super helpful perspective.
Yes.
It's really good to hear some of the things that they're going through, and to give me that perspective of like, okay, even though I'm like losing my mind over Barbie shoes, like it won't be like that for forever.
Yeah,
life is weird. Parenting is weird.
It is.
But
definitely.
I mean, gosh, I'm just so grateful. I'm so grateful for my kids. It's such a cliche.
No, it's not.
And I do. I feel like postpartum is a magical time when that makes it sound like it's a fun time. And it can be a fun time. There's something really special and magic about like those early weeks. And I just feel like every mom deserves to feel that magic.
Yeah.
amidst the chaos, amidst like all of it. And I for my son, he was born in 2021. So we were like a year. So I was pregnant like throughout the very beginning of the pandemic. So mm-hmm. the whole like first year, I was, I mean, not year, but like 9 months, I was pregnant, although it felt like a year because I cooked my baby so late. But, and then for the second year I was postpartum, and it was a really beautiful, wonderful thing to like be in lockdown still a little bit.
I can see that.
My daughter was in school, and pre-K at that point was not virtual. So she was going to in-person school 4 days a week. And my mom was here. She stayed with us for quite a while, actually, like 2 months almost.
That's a dream. That's such a gift.
The only reason she stayed that late was because she ended up getting her vaccine. And to get the second vaccine, she had to stay like 4 extra weeks.
Ah.
So anyways, my mom was here. And like, we just weren't like, there wasn't like the normal like rush and anxiety of like life. I know I just talked about how like babies like to be out, but they like to not be like, I wasn't stressed, you know, we were getting out, but we weren't like being.
No. There's a difference between having obligations you have to get yourself to versus wanting to get out just because you want to be out. There's a huge difference there. And the having the obligations early on, you know, getting to appointments, and if you have to get back to work and that sort of thing, like that's a totally different thing. But that's what the lockdowns did, right? Where they kind of made all of those obligations go away for a little while at least. And so I can see what you're saying about how like having that permission to be at home with your baby and only going out should you want to, would be kind of a definite silver lining, a gift for sure in the postpartum time. No mom should have to feel like they have to do almost anything, especially in that first month, right? Like in an ideal world, like you would just be resting and taking care of your little one. And unfortunately that's not the world we live in. And I think that is where a lot of the fear and a lot of the misery around new parenthood comes from, definitely.
Like what were some of the things, I mean, you mentioned perspective, but what were some of the things that you found helpful this time around? Or that were different than your first two times? I mean, you're still, let's be clear, you're still postpartum.
Yeah, I have a 4-month-old. I think this time around, what was really helpful, just from like some of the practical things I did this time around, were good. I actually stockpiled my freezer a little bit had the foresight to, for like, I took like 1 week or 2 weeks where every dinner that I made a double batch. And this is when I was like 36, 37 weeks pregnant. For like a week or two, every dinner I made, I just made double what I normally would. And then I froze the second half. And that was something that felt like way too much work. Like I just couldn't do it the first couple times around, but for some reason I did it this time and it really wasn't that much work and it paid dividends on the back end. And I had like heard of moms doing that before, but I was like, those are like magical unicorn moms who can like plan and all that stuff. But your time management, parenthood with young children is such a sink or swim kind of thing. And you just naturally find yourself getting so much better at time management. I feel like you get more efficient around certain things.
I feel like I'm still struggling with that.
Well, so yeah, it took me till the third time to do it. You just had your second. I just had my third. I'm saying I did not do that until this time.
I feel like I get like frustrated that I was telling my husband that, you know, the kids used to go down, or my one kid used to go to sleep, and I would have like an hour or two to like have me time. You know, I could watch a show or read a book or like just like stare at Instagram, like anything. And I was like, lately, the season I'm in right now is my, like, I can't do the dishes like after dinner. Like, it's just, for whatever reason, just not like a thing that I can handle. I don't really know why. Well, because my 1-year-old is like just in a really kind of needy, like he's big, oh, right? Yeah. He's not like a tiny little baby, but like he still sometimes gets very like, he needs to be held a lot, which I don't understand. I'm like, you're walking. Not like,
what? Totally normal. Yeah.
and he also hates commotion. Like if I'm sitting down, he's fine. Mm-hmm. But if I like start moving around and like trying to clean and whatever, he just gets like, what are you doing? And so I was saying that like, for me, like my me time right now, like after I get both kids down, is like me doing the dishes. Like that is the me time. Like I'll find a podcast that I like, or, you know, listen to music. But it is helpful for me to remember that that is a season.
Yeah. And I take issue when people are like, don't call that self-care. Don't, like, moms need more self-care than that. And it's like, well, you know what? That's what you can accomplish right now in this season. Could you stand there at the sink and fume and just be really angry that this is the only time you have to yourself today and just do it in a huff and then be done and be upset? Yeah, you totally could. Or you, like you said, you could stand there, put on music that you like, put on a podcast that you like, and just kind of let the activity take you away. And, you know, and that's okay for that to be your self-care for this season of your life, you know, and to understand also that this is the season. So I kind of, yes, moms need more than that, but sometimes that's all you can do. And that's okay. And yeah, like, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good kind of thing.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I have plenty of other, like, I get massages and like, I mean, not like every week or anything, but it's not like I literally never, ever have time to myself. I found for me, the transition to two kids, like, surprisingly hard. And I say that because I still forget that I'm in that transition.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, why does everything like take so long? Or like, why does this feel so hard? Like, I still like, I forget. And I don't know, you can tell me, like, it's every kid sort of like a new transition. Like, did you feel that three was like, oh wow, this is a big transition? Or did you feel like, oh, it's not that different?
Our house got a lot louder, I'll say that. Like, I feel like I can't escape the noise sometimes. And that will drive me a little bit crazy. I like, sometimes I literally like have just left the house to go stand in the driveway for a minute just to have quiet earlier on, like 1 month postpartum. But yeah, it is its own transition every time, because just your family structure changes. There's a whole new person. You have everybody just got a new roommate. Okay. Yeah. That'd be a big deal. We could admit that that's a big deal.
And sometimes babies are the best roommates, right? They don't always.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's okay to admit like that it's going to take some transitioning for everybody to get used to the new roommate. If you were a bunch of single people living together and just brought in a new person, everybody'd be like, oh yeah, like, it's going to take some time for everybody to get used to this new person in the house.
So funny.
And so it's definitely, there's that element of things for sure. But I will say, in terms of like the upheaval, just that feeling of like everything having turned on its head, I really only felt that the first time around. Mm-hmm. Like, because going from 0 to 1, I think that's when your whole identity changes. That's when, like, you went from not being somebody's mom to you're somebody's mom now.
Like, yeah. And it's a 24/7 job.
Yep. And, that right there, I don't think that there's any transition that beats 0 to 1. I just, like, I'll listen to people say all day what they think the hardest transition is, but I just don't think that none of them come with the identity change that 0 to 1 does.
Yeah.
They just don't.
And I feel like there's just a huge transformation that happens. Like I think about my peers who don't have kids and I just think about how different, like, and so I'm not saying it's a good or a bad thing. It just is like my brain is always thinking about my attention is just split, you know, like I don't have as much freedom, as my peers who don't have kids. And again, I'm not saying that's bad or good, but I just,
it's just a fact.
Yeah. I had a really hard time with that, with my first of like, well, when do I get to, like, here's a perfect example. So my daughter, I now realize I watched a lot of TV when she was a baby, like when she would nap, in part because she often napped on me and like, I was just like laying on the couch and was like, well, I can't move because I'm nap trapped. But with my second, I almost never, like, his naps are never at like downtime for me. Never.
No.
Very rarely. Like the other day I may have like, he's asleep, I'm going to go like lay down and just like chill for 5 minutes. But I'm either working or I'm doing stuff with my daughter or like, and so that's just like a, something I noticed about how naps used to be like me time. And now my me time is the dishes.
No, that's a really good point. And I have had the same experience. Now that I think about it. Yeah. Cause like with your first, there's not a second one around that you have to deal with just because, you know, one of them's taken care of. Generally the second one will need something then too.
Yeah.
And yeah, I had the same experience, which now looking back, if you're listening to this and you just had your first and you're in those postpartum days with your first child, like that is something you won't get back probably if you do continue having kids, the, taking that time while you are nap trapped, to just do something that you want to do and do that, like use that, like that, I kind of wish I had realized that back then, now that you say that, because that might be something that might be a little bit of the perspective we've been talking about that can help ease moms into that first postpartum period, especially like do relish that time when you can't be productive because you're trapped underneath a baby who will wake up the second you shift, you know, like relish that time to tear through a book, to watch. I watched so much Great British Baking Show. That was what I watched. Oh,
that's better than what I watched. I watched a lot of crap.
But that's okay, because you know what? Like, we feel like we have to hack every minute of our lives, right? Like, we feel like you have to find a way to be productive doing the littlest things. But
yeah,
postpartum really, really should ingrain in us that our worth is not defined by our productivity.
Yeah. And I would argue too, that almost all of the yummy, delicious, most edifying moments of parenthood are not quote unquote productive, or they don't feel productive in the sense of like how we, and when I said earlier about like my agenda of people enjoying their babies, I know for me, I'm not enjoying parenthood when all I'm thinking about is all the things I have to do.
Yeah.
And that list is always there. So like the moments that I'm able to truly like just set that aside and like be with my kids.
Yeah.
Like that's where the gold is. Like that's the, you know, and I'm not always able to achieve like that harmony, but when I am, I know that I'm in the right headspace.
Yeah. That's a really good point. Definitely.
And just as my oldest gets older, I just realize how fleeting all of it really is.
Yeah.
And yeah, that perspective, I know we keep talking about perspective, but it's just really helpful. And the other thing I was going to say is with my husband, it's interesting. My daughter, she's 6 now, and she's just understanding a little more about the world, and she goes to public school. So she's just, you know, seeing and hearing things, and like, we have to watch what we say, my husband and I, because I'm not even talking about like swear words or anything, just concepts, right? Like political concepts that maybe I don't want to have to explain, or maybe like they're too nuanced to explain to.
Yeah.
And so we just have to be really careful about what we say. And in a way, it's almost like, I remember when my first was born, we would on the weekends, you know, when she would nap, my husband and I would enjoy each other's company. Mm-hmm. And I find as my daughter gets older, not only like she's becoming my daughter's becoming just a more like human. Mm-hmm. And my husband and I get less time that we can be
frank with one another, can talk about the things you want to talk about.
And so we have to really like prioritize that, like separate from, I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but it's just something I've noticed, that we used to have a lot more time together.
Yeah.
And now it's just a little different, and it's good. I'm grateful that I have a daughter who's, you know, growing and able to grasp these concepts
and has some wherewithal. Yeah. She's got her antenna up. I know what you're talking about. My 5-year-old's the same way.
I've thought about like teen. This is like a very weird thing maybe to bring up, but I've thought about parents of teens, mm-hmm. and I'm like, how do you like live your life? Like how do you have sex when you have teens in the house? Like, I don't like, this is totally like foreign to me. That's a thought that has crossed my mind. That's all I will say.
Yeah. So ages and stages, right? Like every stage that you go through, and not to like say, like, not to be that person who's like, oh, you think postpartum is hard, like wait till you have teenagers, but just again, perspective, that should just be like the name of this episode. Perspective tells us that each stage will come with its own challenges, but it'll come with its own rewards. And again, having the village, having community, having other moms who you can talk to about, like, you know, did your baby ever do this? Did your teen ever do that? How did you handle it? Is totally invaluable. And however you can find that village, however you can find that community, whatever it looks like for you, like, it is worth cultivating. It is worth seeking out. It's worth holding on to. My husband and I are leaving like beautiful, gorgeous San Diego, to move to a small town in Texas that, you know, we're excited about living there. We love it, but we didn't move there for the scenery, especially compared to what we're leaving behind. I mean, there are places in San Diego where you look out and you think like you're in the French Riviera, or, you know, like it's just beautiful here. And, this little town in Texas doesn't have any of that, but what it does have is the community that we've been searching for, the place to like, to really dig in and plant some roots and to raise our kids in a village. And we sought it out for that purpose because we've just seen, over our travels over the last several years of our marriage and through having kids, how invaluable that is for not only our kids, but for us as parents and for us as a husband and wife. We just need that. And there's such a lack of that. And I feel like it's felt no more acutely than in the postpartum time, mm-hmm. if you don't have it.
Yeah. In some ways I am grateful I had my first postpartum in New York City, because there's just everything there. There's mm-hmm. everything there. Mm-hmm. And I went to so many meetups and so many mom and baby groups and so many, and I think back to just how that's different from where I'm at now in the suburbs of New Jersey. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited for you. I'm excited for your next great move.
Thanks. We are too. I say as I'm sitting surrounded by boxes, literally in my office. Yeah.
But we're coming up on the hour, and my husband has alerted me that he's like, are you almost done?
Yeah, mine already left 15 minutes ago. I heard the movie that he put on for the kids. I heard that the TV fire up.
Let's see. So is there anything that we didn't, like, I don't know, cover that we want to talk about?
Just if you really feel like, we've talked about kind of some of the hard, heavy feelings you have postpartum. But that's not to say that every hard, heavy feeling you might have during this time is normal and that you can or should mm-hmm. gut through it. And that just because it's what everybody else might be feeling during this time, or, you know, some semblance of it during this time, doesn't mean it's not valid. It doesn't mean you shouldn't reach out and potentially get some kind of help for it if you need to. Just because we say something is hard, like, that doesn't give you, don't belittle it, you know, because I think sometimes when we say, like, oh, everybody, yeah, it's really hard, everybody's experiencing it. And there was a great podcast, or I think it was a podcast I listened to with Leah Labresco Sargent, who has an awesome Substack called Other Feminisms. She has said before that she gives every new mom friend of hers her, like, PPD spiel, her, like, postpartum depression spiel, is like, you're going to hear everybody say, like, oh, it's so hard. But there's hard, and then there's, like, impossible. Mm-hmm. If you have a baby that's, like, literally screaming around the clock and you are not getting any sleep ever, like, that's not normal. There are shades of hard, there are shades of difficult. And again, that's where, like, having other moms around to talk to is super important, because somebody can tell you then, like, yeah, I mean, it's hard, but my baby did sleep sometimes. Like, if you have a baby that's screaming bloody murder around the clock, like, we need to get your baby some help. We need to get you some help. And
honestly, those babies who are that cantankerous, there's something going on.
Right, exactly. You know? Right.
Like, babies aren't born, like, just grumpy.
No.
Like, I mean, some are grumpier than others.
Yes.
But usually that's a sign of pain somehow, right, somewhere. And,
but if you're a first-time mom who hasn't been, you know, if you didn't have, like, younger siblings, if there weren't babies in your house when you were a teenager, if you never babysat, mm-hmm. if you don't have friends your age who have kids in this same season of life, you're not going to know that. And so if something's feeling impossibly hard, like, you need to reach out, you need to find someone that you can talk to about it and not feel ashamed to do that. Not feel like, you know, it's trivial or unimportant, or it's something you just need to gut through. It's just part of the transition. The more that we have the space and feel the permission to talk about these things, the better off we'll all be. And so just making that plug again for finding that thick community where you can have those conversations with other moms is super important. And again, like, if you don't have a mom's group in your area, you don't feel like you have to start one, or that you need to, you know, search out something that's already organized, like, just try getting out in your neighborhood and going for a walk, because I guarantee mm-hmm. you're going to find another mom who is feeling the same way or has felt the same way as you. Yeah. Just not being afraid to get out and about, and to start developing those relationships where you can, I think is super important. And I think has been one of the single most important things for me during all of my postpartum periods. I think I've met, like I said earlier, like, so many of my good mom friends out and doing neighborhood walks. So, and it might not happen the first time, it might not happen the first five times, but you know, chances are really good. Again, if you live in a neighborhood where you can walk safely, there's sidewalks, if there's parks, you know, and don't feel weird about taking a newborn to a park. Seriously. I know you think like, why would I take my newborn to the park? What am I going to do? Like slide down the slide with them? You shouldn't do that. So no, that's not what I'm saying. Like, if you want to go find a park bench and sit in the sunshine with your newborn, newborns are kind of like other mom bait too, because there's probably a mom at the park with her older kids who maybe has decided that their family is done, but would still really love to sniff a newborn's head. Or, you know, like there's going to be other moms there. Go where the moms are, to find your mom friends. And it can be just as simple as showing up to the park, as taking a walk. And like Cassie talked about earlier, you know, there's benefits in it for you, for getting out and about, getting the sun on your face, getting exercise. So I think that's something I want to hammer home. I just decided take walks when you can.
Yeah. Well, go to parks. All year round too, by the way.
Yeah.
Just because it's January doesn't mean you kids don't have to get a walk in.
Yeah. And like the Dane, I think it's the Danes say there's no bad weather. There's just like not knowing how to dress for the weather, basically.
Yeah. So, and people, it's funny. People are always worried about babies being warm enough, which is a legitimate concern. But if you're baby wearing, like, and you're bundled, like they're going to be fine.
Yeah. You know? They're plenty warm, and you can even put them in the stroller, put them in the car seat carrier. You can tuck a blanket around them.
Yep. Things you can wrap them in.
Yep.
Like unless you're literally in Antarctica
or the desert, because you don't want to be getting heat stroke or anything
true.
I guess.
This is true.
But, most of us don't live in the desert or Antarctica. So you can figure out a way to get outside, do it, and you'll thank yourself and you'll feel like you accomplished something too. Like even if you don't end up meeting something, like I'm sure you remember those first few times you took your baby out of the house by yourself. Like, oh man, what a boon to your like mom self-confidence, right? Yeah, to feel like I got this baby changed, fed, diapered, out the door. We did something. We came back. We didn't fall apart. Like it's such, right? Like
I felt that way with the first time I went with both kids somewhere. Uh-huh. I was like, yeah, look at me. Like I deserve a medal.
Yes. And you do. Okay. You do. All right. I'm here to tell you, I'll give you that medal. You tell me if you do that, I'll send you, you know, it'll be like the office version when they did the office Olympics, and it'll be a yogurt lid with paper clips. Little obscure office reference there for all the fans, but, I'll do it like, 'cause you deserve a medal for that. And you're going to feel great about yourself and you might meet somebody, which would be even better. So do that. Okay.
Well, on that note, I will go on a walk. I actually have to go on a walk to pick up my daughter. But I'm so excited about the second season of the Natural Womanhood podcast.
Me
too.
We've
got some really exciting stuff in store. So stick around. We hope you listen and share, and while you're doing the dishes or not.
Yes.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed. Stick around for our next episode where Grace interviews Leah Jacobson of Guiding Star, a truly inspirational business owner, entrepreneur, mom, and fellow fertility awareness enthusiast. We're out.